This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Factor. If you want to eat better this year and are looking for fast, healthy, restaurant-quality meals that are ready to eat and easy on your budget, Factor is the perfect solution. Sign and save right now by going to factormeals.com/talktv50 and use code TALKTV50 to get 50% off your order. That's code TALKTV50 at factormeals.com/talktv50 to get 50% off.
Hi, this is Barbara Feldon, and you're listening to TV Confidential.
Ed Robertson, welcoming you to this week's edition of TV Confidential, radio talk show about television that will welcome back Michael Learned. In our second hour, Michael Learned, the actress known around the world as Olivia Walton, on The Waltons. We hope you'll stay tuned for that. Our second hour will also include a conversation with Charles Agron. Charles Agron, a screenwriter, producer, and actor whose film company, K Street Pictures, specializes in psychological thrillers. Charles' latest movie, Alter Reality, is not only playing in theaters everywhere as this program airs, it also marks one of the final screen appearances of Ed Asner, while also paying homage in many respects to Rod Serling and The Twilight Zone. Charles Agron will join us in our second hour. We hope you stay tuned for that as well. In the meantime, we'll open up this hour by welcoming back our friend Josh Mills. Josh Mills, son of singer, actress, and mother of all television archivist Edie Adams, and the curator for the estate of Edie Adams and the estate of Ernie Kovacs. Ernie Kovacs, of course, television's original genius, a man whose utterly unique sensibility influenced two generations of comedians and comedy institutions, including Saturday Night Live, Monty Python, David Letterman, Martin Mull, Rowan Atkinson, Harry Shearer, too many others to mention. Since his last visit to our program, Josh has collaborated with Pat Thomas and Ben Modell on a marvelously conceived full-color coffee table book that not only gives you a glimpse inside the mind of Ernie Kovacs, but shows you that in addition to being the visual genius that we all saw on television, Ernie Kovacs was also a notorious illustrator, novelist, essayist, newspaper columnist, cartoonist, and poet. Name of the book? Ernie and Kovacs Land. We'll tell you more about it in just a second. Josh, welcome back to our program.
Hey, thank you so much, Ed. I'm glad to be back.
And speaking of Pat Thomas is also with us today. Pat's books on popular culture and the counterculture include Invitation to Openness, The Jazz and Soul Photography of Les McCann, Material Wealth, Mining the Personal Archive of Allen Ginsberg, and Did It, Jerry Rubin and American Revolution. Jerry Rubin, of course, one of the founders of the Yippies. Pat makes the case that there is a direct line between the political activism of the Yippies and the comedy of Ernie Kovacs. We'll ask him about that a little later on in our conversation. Pat, nice to have you on our show.
Nice to be here for the first time.
Let's just start with the obvious question. Now, I know that you, Josh, you run It's Alive, which is a music-related business.
Indeed.
And Pat, you've written about, in addition to countercultural history, you've written a couple of books, one of which is coming out. It's a book of photography about a photographer that captured a lot of musicians from the 60s and 70s. Is your common interest in music one of the things that led you to get together?
We met at a music business party, and Josh introduced himself, and we wound up grabbing breakfast like just a few days later. And it was within weeks that Josh invited me over to his villa. And as I, Josh hates this word, I probably should stop using it, but
I know what the word is.
Part of his villa, not his living space, but his storage area, had a very hoarders-like vibe. And when Josh realized that I was an author, and especially an author that did vintage archival things and visual books, he asked me, you know, could we do a book together? And I have to be honest, the name Ernie Kovacs did not mean that much to me when we started. What happened was, is over time, I really got attached to the topic. I read Edie's memoir that's basically, she calls it the Kovacs Years, Sing a Pretty Song. And so over time, I really got attached to this material. And I also, frankly, just got attached to Josh. We became very good friends and really enjoyed working together. And so I was able to take the book to my usual publisher, Fantagraphics. And by luck, Gary Groth, founder, president of Fantagraphics, loves Kovacs. And so it really became a labor of love project for Fantagraphics as well.
I've talked about this with other authors, and having published a few books myself, I know a little bit about publishers and authors. For those who haven't seen it, Ernie in Kovacs Land, it's a coffee table book, but is it, I mean, and I say full color, and that's an industry term, but it means what it means. Almost everything in this book, almost everything you see is in color versus black and white. Mm-hmm. And knowing a little bit about the industry, it costs a little more to publish books with color pages and on laminated pages. So this is not an inexpensively produced book. But to me, if you're going to capture the essence of Ernie, everything's got to be in color.
Right. Well, the way to describe this book, since we're not on television, is imagine if the Getty did an expansive exhibition of Ernie's personal memorabilia and archives, and then you go to the bookstore and you buy the expansive, beautiful exhibition catalog. That's the best way to describe this book.
And the book is Ernie in Kovacs Land. It is available Fantagraphics Books, fantagraphics.com, as well as amazon.com. Josh Mills and Pat Thomas, two of the co-authors / co-editors with us in the studio. And in addition to having a treasure trove of Ernie, of some of Ernie's writings that we haven't seen before, some of his
illustrations,
previously, and some of his notes on scripts, some of the production pages with figures that I'm not sure are true or not, but it's they are true.
Oh yeah, that nothing is fudged.
Okay, so there's one page where it's near the end, and I forget which special it, but he was like something like $1,300 or $1,800 over budget.
Oh, that's common for Ernie. Yeah, for sure.
But it also speaks to the fact that more often than not, the networks gave him full rein, and they worried about the details later.
Well, and Ernie, too. I mean, that was his thing. He always wanted to be the one in charge. If somebody came in, and this happened, you know, network executives would come in, and they would say, hey, you know, we want this writer on the show, or we want you to have a head writer. And Ernie would say, well, if that's what you want, get somebody else put on a Western, because I'm not doing it. And he was serious. And he was on four networks, and he was on late night, and he was on the morning, and he was on in the afternoon, and he was on primetime. So he didn't have a problem telling people to, you know, say, I'm not doing that. The thing was, Ernie, I don't know if we understand, if everybody understands above the line and below the line, but Ernie was the producer for a lot of his shows. Ernie didn't even understand it. So consequently, when he died, the very last shows that he did, his ABC specials, he was really, really over budget, because he didn't work by saying, oh, this is an 8-hour show, we always have to wrap at this time. So if he wanted to work for 24 hours in a row, he worked for 24 hours in a row, and that cost money. It didn't matter to him.
And the fact that just so much of Ernie's work on particularly the last seven specials he did for ABC, but a lot of the other things that your mom made sure that was archived one way or another before anyone even thought about archiving, and the fact and that you have shared with the public in the last 10 years through the various Ernie Kovac DVD releases through Shout Factory. I mean, we're grateful that we have so much of this to see.
Yeah. Well, I feel like, in a way, I'm just sort of a conduit because my mom was really the one who did all this stuff. She deserves all the credit. I always say this, but it's true. Everybody who is in any kind of film or archival preservation says your mom is a first ballot Hall of Famer. She is the one who was doing this in the 1960s when nobody was saving stuff, when there was no reason to save this stuff.
Because television was, you know, back then, television was just considered disposable, one and done.
Yeah. I mean, you were lucky if there was maybe another safety element that was sent across the country to show on a repeat or you know, was the West Coast version. People just didn't save anything. So my mom, when Ernie died, she found out that essentially the networks were getting rid of this stuff, and she got a lawyer and said, anything that says Ernie Kovacs, I will buy, and stored it for 40 years. I mean, those are bills for 40 years. She was like, Ernie's special. That's why it has to be saved.
She not only stored it, she stored it in like a Johnny Carson-like, sealed, hermetically sealed, temperature control.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, because
it's the only way to do it.
It's the only way to do it. Otherwise, you know, the film's going to deteriorate and stuff like that. And so, I mean, she's been called on by more than one person the patron saint of television archivists. But it's just the fact that she had the vision and she knew that what he was doing was special and needed to be shared with other viewers. That's amazing.
And this book is a direct outgrowth of all that preservation because she didn't just save the video, she saved audio, which we're working on right now. Air checks that have never been heard in years and years and years. We could definitely talk about it, but
is there another release coming?
Well, there might be an audio release or two, but you know, there's video, there's audio, there's, you know, the ephemera in this book, which Pat helped me dig through. And actually, Pat has a funny story about essentially at a certain point he was like, okay, I don't need to see anymore.
Yeah, I mean, one of the keys to doing these types of books is to know when to stop. You know, I have countless friends who are chewing my ear off for over a decade. Oh, I'm working on a book about blah, 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 right? Well, I'm still waiting, and I'm tired of hearing about it, right? And so you need to go, you know what, we've got more than enough. And yes, you could say, well, there might have been box number 77 that we didn't look at that has some gems. Well, you know what? We wouldn't be sitting here today if I was waiting to look at box 77. So
true.
You just got to know when to stop.
You got to know when to stop, and you have to make choices. You can't fit everything into one volume.
Right.
Otherwise, you would go bankrupt trying to produce something like this. But
yeah.
I like to ask this question to authors about the thought process. I mean, how do you know what to choose and what to put aside, and what do you think will translate to the written page?
This is a good time to mention our third guy, Ben Modell. So as I have already confessed, I didn't really know much about Ernie when I started this.
I won't hold that against you.
Yeah. And so at some point, Josh and I were talking. He said, hey, there's this guy, Ben Modell, who's like the Ernie guy. And so I'll just use some round numbers. Let's say we had, I don't know, 2,000 things that could potentially go in the book. So we talked to Ben. We said, look, put the A list, right? So pick 300 or 400 things, like the book absolutely has to have this. Then pick a few hundred things. It'd be nice if it was in there. And then I'm sure there'll be a few hundred things you're like, I don't care if this is in there or not. So Ben and Josh also to some degree sort of curated that part. And then it became that, like, well, we needed to annotate. You know, some of this stuff is self-explanatory, yeah, or whatever. And Ben painstakingly was like, well, this is from this and this is from that. And it got very tedious for Ben, I think. and then, you know, Ben, I very smart guy, but not necessarily an author. You know, so I think he struggled to figure out his working methods. And then the other thing that was weird is this book, because it's not a biography, it's not linear. It's not like Ernie is born, Ernie dies. So I tried to explain to Jacob Covey, who did the design, I said, just kind of put it together visually. And even though Jacob is very much a think outside of the box guy. It was almost too much freedom for him. So it took him almost a year to kind of put his head around the fact that the instructions are there are no instructions. And then when he finally delivered it to us, we were like, oh my God, this is... Because Jacob has done most of my books, and I was even a little jealous. Because he's done great work for me here, but I'm like, oh my God, dude, you've outdone yourself. Ironically enough, after designing about literally 1,500 books, he retired and moved on to a different type of career after. So this is really his final book.
The name of the book, Ernie and Kovacs Land, Writings, Drawings, and Photographs from Television's Original Genius, edited by Josh Mills, Ben Modell, and Pat Thomas. Josh and Pat are here with me in the studio today. Ernie and Kovacs Land, available Fantagraphics books, fantagraphics.com, as well as amazon.com. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
One more item if you want to eat better this year. Our friends at Factor are the perfect solution. They have more than 35 fresh, pre-prepared, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved meals, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto meals that are restaurant quality, ready to heat, and ready to eat with no prepping, no cooking, and no cleanup necessary. Check it out yourself by going to factormeals.com/talk. TV50, factormeals.com/talk TV50. Astrid and I recently checked out some of Factor's keto selections, including their roasted tomato and feta cavatappi with broccoli and red peppers, and the garlic and herb roasted mushrooms, while their three bean chili with quinoa is just the right size for lunch. We also enjoyed their chocolate banana smoothies, which is just one of the more than 60 healthy and nutritious add-on options Factor provides that will help you fuel up and feel good all day, while best of all, Factor meals are less expensive than takeout. Sign up and save right now by going to factormeals.com/talktv50. Use promo code TALKTV50 to get 50% off your order. That's code TALKTV50 at factormeals.com/talktv50 to get 50% off.
Hi, this is George Slaughter for TV Confidential. Watch it. Don't watch it. Listen to it.
Listening to you describe the thought process and how this book was put together, we mentioned, I think we mentioned in our open, you've done a couple of books on music, photographs of music artists.
Yeah.
And I know that we've talked about this with you, Josh. Ernie loved music.
Right.
I'm just thinking there's sort of a, there's a definite jazz vibe in the, and just, at least I got that listening to you and how this put, and how this book was put together.
Yeah, it's very much a jazz vibe. And also, you know, my three main books, I've done others, but my first book was How the Black Panthers and the Black Power Movement Intersected with Musicians. My second book was about Jerry Rubin, Abby Hoffman, and the Yippies, and how they intersected with John Lennon, Dylan, and Phil Oakes. And my third book that just came out, which is an Allen Ginsberg collection similar to the Ernie thing. And Ginsberg, of course, associated with Dylan and McCartney and jazz drummer Elvin Jones. So as I was writing my essay for this Ernie and Kovacs Land, I realized that even Ernie inspired the counterculture, right? Because even though he was theoretically part of mainstream culture, he was so wacky that Abby Hoffman loved him, and Alice Cooper loved him, and obviously Saturday Night Live and Laugh-In. And so, you know, this book is almost, for me, is almost like a sidebar to my other books. It complements them in a way that I had not envisioned when I first started.
Well, certainly anarchy is a word that you can associate with Ernie.
I mean, totally.
Anarchy in the best possible sense of the word.
Yeah, well, that's right. The way I talk about this book to me was that when we first presented it to Fantagraphics, they kind of said, okay, you need to do a book map. I didn't know what that was.
I don't know what a book map is.
Like a proposal.
Okay, that I hear.
Yeah,
I hear.
But more of a visual one because the book is visual. Yeah.
So we put that together, and he kind of went, I still don't understand exactly what it is. He'd already agreed to do the book, but he's like, I don't understand what this is. And what I really felt like, and what I think came out of it, and what Gary now likes about it, is that it's so improvisational, it's jazz-like, it's irreverent. It's not like, you get a look into Ernie's head. It's not like Pat said, he's born, he dies, and everything in between. You could start in the middle of the book, you could start at the end of the book, you could start at the very beginning, and you'll find something that maybe in the 1950s, it could be in the 40s, it could be early 60s, so it's really a look inside of his brain. And I kind of think it did a really good job of that, actually.
It does a very good job. And just to button up a point we started earlier, not every author is fortunate to have a publisher who will give you the leeway that your publisher gave the two of you and gave you and Ben and Pat. And the fact that they're willing to hang with you, even though it was non-linear.
Well, I mean, the Josh was a little frustrated by Fana because they were often sort of hands off, and that
for
is
5 years.
Yeah, that is the beauty.
It took 5 years.
But this is the beauty and genius of Fana, because I've already done a bunch of books with Fana, but in other words, Fana will give you as much rope as you want to hang yourself. And by hanging yourself, that could be a death, or it could also be a thing of beauty, right? And so Fana is really the perfect place for this book, and it's been, you know, most of the other books I've rattled off, except for Ginsberg, are also on Fanta, because they're very much sort of like artist, author friendly. Yeah, it just worked out. I mean, if we bought this book to Random House, first of all, they probably wouldn't have done it, but at some point they would have said, this is just too friggin' crazy. We're taking over, or we're canceling it.
Yeah.
You know?
And it would probably take the arc of a traditional coffee table book where, you know, you've got every page. It would be a lot more linear.
Yeah. It'd be more linear. It would be maybe a little much more formal, more uptight, more basically everything that Ernie wasn't is what it would be.
Well, I'm sure somewhere in the great ether, Ernie is smiling and very happy.
Yeah, I think he is.
I hope so. Absolutely.
The name of the book, Ernie and Kovacs Land, Writings, Drawings, and Photographs from Television's Original Genius, edited by Josh Mills, Ben Modell, and Pat Thomas. Josh and Pat are here with me in the studio today. Ernie and Kovacs Land, available Fantagraphics Books, Fantagraphics.com, as well as Amazon.com. Take a quick time out. We'll talk some more with Josh and Pat. We come back on TV Confidential. Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/TV Confidential, x.com/TV Confidential, or at TV Confidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.